Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, you're listening to Core Dialogues Radio, presented by ID Group, where thought-provoking conversation and thought leaders meet on air. Every Thursday at 4 p.m., we hit the airwaves with forward-thinking ideas, philosophies, and questions, connecting our listeners to ideas that will get you thinking. The answers are in our studio. Now, here's your host and whole systems branding expert, Dr. Mona.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's edition of Core Dialogues Radio. We're streaming, as we do every week, live from our Business Radio X studios here in beautiful downtown Pensacola. I'm your host, Mona Amadeo, and every Thursday we meet here at 4 o'clock Central to connect you with really some smart people. And you can listen to us every week and connect with us online at Core Dialogues Radio. Excuse me, let me do it again, coredialogues.businessradiox.com, and that's dialogues with an S. Each week, we really gather here for our purpose of connecting you with some amazing people, some really great ideas that we hope will inspire you, challenge you, and maybe even motivate you a little bit. And we have a basic belief here that organizations and people in them have a tremendous power to positively impact the world. And I will tell you this, the guest that we have with us today is absolutely one of those people who are using his talents and to really make things happen. And I want to just welcome Howard Liebman here with us today. A little bit about Howard, his training. He really has combined his training in education leadership and his entrepreneurial spirit to really tackle what I think is one of the most daunting social problems facing America today, and that is high school dropout rates. And as a former teacher, a high school teacher, in fact, this is something near and dear to my heart. So Howard is doing some things that are just amazing, that is having a big impact on the world. Howard's the co-founder and superintendent of schools for Smart Horizons Career Online Education. This is really, what's really cool and unique about this program, this is the first fully accredited online education program. It's a school district, too. The way they talk about this is a school district. So the people who come through this program are coming through a program that is accredited through Advanced ED, and SACS, which is SACS is an accrediting body that accredits things like junior colleges and colleges across the United States. NCA, all of those things are. He's got the same accreditations as colleges and universities have. So that's a very important difference. So the people who come through his program are not GED. They are high school graduates. And this is a big differentiator, I think, for what they're doing there. And what is so amazing is Dr. Liebman and his team are really turning some really tragic statistics into some cool success stories, which I think is kind of a great summary and a testimony to their work. So let me give you just some little background here on if you don't always, most of us sit around and you hear a lot, particularly in political years, right, about how we got to do something about education. But Howard and his team have really done something and are really trying to make a difference with like I said, a really challenge here. So a couple of the staggering statistics about high school dropouts. Every year, 1.2 million students drop out of high school in the United States alone. That's the equivalent of about a student every 26 seconds, or 7,000 students a day. The other piece of it, of course, is the economic impact that dropping out has on students. A high school dropout will earn $200,000 less than a high school graduate over his lifetimes, and almost $1 million less than a college graduate will. And among those between the ages of 18 and 24, dropouts were more than twice as likely as college graduates to live in poverty, according to the Department of Education. Dropouts experienced poverty rate of 30.8%, while those with at least a bachelor's degree had a poverty rate of 13.5%. And of course, one of the most disturbing pieces of all of this is that people in the United States who drop out, high school dropouts, commit about 75% of the crimes. So we're talking real social impact that dropouts are having. And but here's the good news. That's the challenge. But here's the good news. Howard's here to tell us that these are sobering statistics, but he says there's hope, and he and his people are doing something about this. So Howard, welcome. welcome, and we so appreciate you being here and appreciate all the great work that you guys are doing.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's just start out a little bit. Some people may not have heard, many people may not have heard of Smart Horizons. Tell me a little bit about your program. And I'm always interested in stories. So tell me about the story of how it all started for you and where this idea came from.
Well, you know, I come from three generations of public educators in my family. Come from a background, was an Algebra 1 teacher in my 20s in the public school system. At the same time, was getting my master's degree in clinical social work and looking at trauma-based issues and thinking that the classroom was only going to be a period of time for me to determine what my next step was. And I really wanted to go on to clinical social work because I wanted to have an impact. Mm-hmm. And not that I couldn't have an impact in the classroom, but I wanted to have a greater impact. And that led me to basically looking at the issue of educational trauma. And it was in the summer of 2009. We were in an economic downfall. Mm-hmm. They say sometimes that's the worst time to start businesses, but other people say, what the heck? And at the same time, educational organizations during a recession or this great recession actually do very well.
That would make sense.
Because more people go back for an education and training. So that's really where I came up with this concept of educational trauma and looking at the individuals that have left the system already. And when we're talking about individuals that have left the educational system, they're over the age of 21. Mm-hmm. They're out of the compulsory age group of going to a public school district, even though some of them go back in the adult education bucket. Mm-hmm. But when you look in the adult education bucket, you just see GED or some alternative high school. And we wanted to expand on that. And we also didn't want to go into school districts and work with school districts. Intentionally, we didn't want to do that. And it wasn't because we don't like them. It was just because what we find is when people are traumatized, they don't go back.
Yeah, into the trauma, right?
Into the trauma, unless you're in an abuse cycle.
Sure.
Obviously, sometimes that's where it happens. So that's where we really built the program around the concept of, well, we can't have failure because they saw a lot of Fs. So it's master proficiency based. They have to get a 70 to advance. They can keep mm-hmm. trying until they get a 70. Mm-hmm. They have assigned an academic coach that's with them from point of entry to point of exit. So that person is working with them all week long. Mm-hmm. And then the third was we must have it be applicable. And that's where we switch the program and use an upside down program model. And you come in and you're 30 years old and you don't have a high school diploma, that we then say to you, what do you want to major in? And you have one of eight choices: retail, food service.
Okay.
Transportation, all jobs that people without high school diplomas or just high school diplomas are matriculate into. Mm-hmm. So the students are really, they're graduating with two things: an accredited high school diploma and an accredited entry level workforce
skill
certificate.
Skill set. Yes.
And that's dealing with that applicability mm-hmm. trauma. Mm-hmm. And what we found is when we started with their career courses, instead of putting them in math courses, because I was an algebra teacher, which is the one area where students drop out the most because of...
I bet.
You know, it's not... most people don't like algebra. So, you know, that's really where this idea came about. And then lastly, we decided, okay, where are these 40 million adults mm-hmm. in the country who don't have a high school diploma? And they're in public libraries. They're in correctional facilities. They're working as frontline employees for Walmart, McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And they're in workforce boards. Mm-hmm. And here we are, four years later and 10,000 students.
Amazing. And again, this is an online course, right? I can do this at night. I can do this between whatever I can and wherever I can, right? There's no requirement for me to show up in person anywhere. Is that correct?
Somewhat, but we're more of a blended program because in public libraries, they're required at times to go to public libraries because that's where they have internet and computer access, and there are cohort models. So there's an advisor at the public library. Public libraries are really shifting from being just, they're really becoming information access, digital information access repositories and locations for people. In corrections, they go into a lab because they're obviously incarcerated. Mm-hmm. In workforce boards, they're going into the workforce boards. So it's, you know, actually the majority of our students, I think, are taking it in some form of a blended format where they're sitting in a lab.
Okay.
And then they're taking their courses, and it's a series of 18 courses because it's 18 credits.
So how does someone, just the, how do they pay for this? This is, you know, they're, I mean, we see the numbers, right? These aren't people who are living in the lap of luxury usually. How is this funded, and how are people paying for this?
We're a company that's designed really for public-private partnerships. Mm-hmm. As a private company, we're designed to, for the most part, partner with public companies, except when we're partnered with Walmart and McDonald's. It's mm-hmm. an employee benefit for every one of their frontline employees who don't have a high school diploma, and that's thousands upon thousands. And we're seeing more corporations come to the table mm-hmm. to provide workforce training and subsidize that training for their frontline employees, especially all the minimum wage controversy we've seen in that industry.
Yeah.
But at public libraries, at correctional sites, at workforce boards, that's coming through the government-funded budget of that department. So as libraries want to become more workforce centers, they subsidize it out of their own budget. Corrections wants to offer not just GED or adult basic literacy, they want to offer a yes. third program like ours, so it comes out of their education budget.
How long does it take people to go through this? I mean, what's a typical... first of all, I didn't know that corporations were doing this, which is a cool social responsibility kind of check for them. And certainly, there's got to have some impact on their performance with their employees and maybe loyalty, et cetera. So that's sort of cool. But generally speaking, how long will it take a person to get through your program?
12 to 14 months. It's an 18-month program, one course a month. But since we're a school district, which is a unique global accreditation, mm-hmm. we're able to transfer credits that they might have had when they dropped out.
Cool.
So on average, our students drop out, transfer in 6 to 7 core academic courses that they took when they were in a public school mm-hmm. district because we're mm-hmm. a school district.
Sure.
So there's
Brilliant, Howard. Brilliant. that's great because it's fair. They've done the work, right?
They've done the work. They've come in. They take their first 4 career electives, and then they see all of a sudden, oh, I have another 6 credits I've transferred in. Oh, I have 10 of the 18. Mm-hmm. The whole idea with re-engagement is to help them get to a place where they don't flight. They mm-hmm. fight.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But in a healthy way.
Yes.
Because most people flight from trauma.
Yes.
And
yes.
the association of not having to associate with an F because you can't fail, having a career or workforce track.
Makes sense.
And having an academic coach support, those are the 3 trauma variables they experienced mm-hmm. in high school. Mm-hmm. So when we designed this on a clear board, mm-hmm. I was pretty resilient on, we must counter every one of those trauma variables with something significant mm-hmm. to reduce the flight.
Mm-hmm. What were the things you had to overcome to make this happen? I mean, this is pretty unique. Like I said, this is not a traditional GED, you know, it's a standard out there. You drop out of high school, you get your DOD. So I'd like to know 2 things. One, as you kind of imagine this, envision this, what were some of the challenges that you had to overcome in order to bring this baby to life, so to speak? Let's start with that question, then I've got a follow-up for it.
Probably my own private negative self-talk.
That's not powerful, is it?
It is. It's powerful. And some of that had to do with when we were starting this, a lot of people said you would never get internet in prisons. There's internet in prisons now.
That's right.
They said you'd never get this in libraries because libraries aren't significant.
Yeah.
We're in libraries. So I think it was just continuing to push mm-hmm. and really communicate the vision mm-hmm. because perception becomes reality. And so I think that was probably that and the challenge of getting accredited the way we got accredited
yeah.
was a real, people said you would never get accredited yeah. as a school district. That's only for public entities. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, why can't a private entity procure that type mm-hmm. of accreditation? Mm-hmm. And work at partnering with public entities. And we had to go through a lot of obstacles of being told no.
Yes, yes.
So I think combination of those 2 things were probably the biggest challenges to getting this off the ground?
You know, one of the things when I look at your accreditation and I look at, you know, regular high school, GED, as the people who are going through your program, why is that accreditation so important for people who, you know, not in your world of education? Why is that accreditation so important, and why was it so important to you?
Because there's six regionally accredited secondary bodies across the country, depending on what region you're in. Mm-hmm. And these accrediting bodies are supported by the Federal Department of Education. So when these students go on to post-secondary vocational program, and a lot of our students are going on, 76% of our graduates, for every 100, 76 are matriculating on into vocational programs. Maybe they're not going to a traditional AA program, but they're going to become a medical tech at Pensacola State College, or an HVAC technician, or a correctional officer. Mm-hmm. So that's where that accreditation was really important, mm-hmm. because when you're applying to college, one of the line items is an accredited high school diploma or GED.
Correct.
And we think the GED is good, mm-hmm. but only 500,000 people pass a year. Mm-hmm. That's out of 40 million. Mm-hmm. And then when you look at the social economic impact that you spoke about, and you look at over a lifetime, we can re-engage someone and get them their secondary diploma with their workforce training. We know that 76% of them most likely are going to matriculate on because we've broken that educational trauma cycle.
Yeah. They believe, right?
They believe.
Yeah.
But if we, for every 100 we educate and get a diploma, that's $20 million more in earnings for that cohort of 100 students, and $6 million in tax earnings that we're able to procure back.
And this, and the other side of that, of course, is that you are removing the negative impact of them not having that. I mean, so there's really a multiple factor, Mr. Mathematician, you know, of the fact that, yes, they're working now, they're doing that, but it's also the fact that they're not on welfare, they're not in crime, they're not in prison, they're not in all those things that we've just talked about. So it's a huge multiplier, I would think.
Huge multiplier. And you also talked about, from a criminal, you know, criminal justice reform perspective, we have to remember in the 80s and 90s, we had extreme growth in the correctional system in this country. I mean, in the 80s, it was about lock them up. Mm-hmm. So now we have 2.2 million inmates in state correctional facilities across the country. Approximately 1.6 million of them don't have a high school diploma. And you just mentioned in the opening statistic that 75% of crimes are committed by people who don't have a high school diploma. So what the data shows us is that if they get an education while they're incarcerated, which is what we do with Florida Department of Corrections, there's anywhere upwards of a 44 to 52% greater chance they don't come back.
So the recidivism,
Recidivism rates really, really decrease, which is really important because it's expensive to house an inmate.
Lot less expensive to educate them, right? And that's really where you got started, right?
Correct.
So you saw the opportunity there and then grew from there to doing the other things that you're doing.
Correct. It really started with the vision and going into correctional facilities. I had the vision of going into correctional facilities and going into workforce boards. Mm-hmm. Correctional facilities were first, ironically, but corrections is across the country, there's many states where it's against the law for inmates to even get on the internet. So you have real challenges to market.
How did you do that?
We did that because Florida has been pretty innovative in the correctional side of the world, in the corrections world. They've really done some very innovative things around programming and around access to programming that it was a good timing.
Yeah. Just right timing.
And it makes sense.
Yeah. So where are you guys working from a national, are you working in all 50 states or 20 states?
We're just about across the country. Our biggest three states are the state of Florida, state of California, and state of Michigan. But in public libraries, we're in about 20 states. Mm-hmm. And then in corporations, because we're partnered with Walmart or McDonald's, any Walmart or McDonald's
store. Right?
So we're across the country. I mean, we're really graduating students from everywhere across the country.
So how did, you know, I think you know this, I've done some work in sustainability and social programs of corporate America. Obviously, they have a huge opportunity to make enormous difference. How did you get into Walmart? That is like, amazing.
Walmart, actually, because it is a corporate-owned entity, mm-hmm. they're not franchise-owned. Mm-hmm. I must say they've done a really good job of centralizing programming or benefits or distribution within
everything.
They do a really good job. Yeah. And they looked at their frontline employees and said, you know what? If we really want to have an impact, we can have an impact here. Yeah. So, you know, and then our work through, which is controversial, you know, I believe is, I have strong feelings about it because I personally experienced working with the Clinton Global Initiative.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, yeah.
You know, we were one of their featured, we were actually recognized by them as the top educational institution in the country that's re-engaging adults back into the educational system. So they do a lot of work that's pretty intense and pretty has an impact. Now, I'm sure there are other issues, but there appear to be other issues, but the work we've done with them, and that really, the White House created an initiative called Upskill America.
Okay.
And that is an initiative where they are promoting corporations to provide subsidized workforce training and education for their frontline employees. And that is really where we made our connection to
between our work through Clinton Global Initiative
and between our work through Upskill America.
Okay.
McDonald's was more through Clinton Global Initiative. Mm-hmm. Walmart was more through Upskill America. Mm-hmm. And they've just all converged at the right timing because we saw Starbucks come out with paying for college diplomas for their employees. So I think it was just a timing perspective. Mm-hmm. I think providing subsidizing training for frontline workers is seen as a very valuable benefit.
And it seems like a no-brainer. I mean, in many ways, and you've taken away a lot of the challenges, I would think. So if I'm like in Walmart and I'm a frontline employee, is there like a break room? I go to a break. How does this technically, not to get too much in the weeds, but how does that work?
For corporations, it's probably the only channel that we serve where the students are the most independent.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also working with their manager.
Okay.
Who has to approve the educational benefit.
It's a big commitment then on the part of the corporation, isn't it?
So it's a big commitment. I mean, the commitment, the educational work that Walmart and McDonald's are doing, incredible. McDonald's just hired recently Robert Gibbs, who was communications press secretary for Clinton,
mm-hmm.
is really doing an amazing job of conveying, and their chief learning officer, Rob Lauer, of conveying the importance mm-hmm. of making it about their people.
Yes.
Because when we look at corporations, where the country, and you know this, this is what you do. I think that greater social corporate responsibility and purpose mm-hmm. is becoming, this generation wants that.
Sure.
I mean, when you look at Google, they're the information expert. When you mm-hmm. look at Apple, they're the technology innovator. You know, when these companies feel like, when the society feels that they're contributing
yes.
to making things better, kind of takes a life of its own.
Well, it is. It's a, you know, as you know, we do the branding work. And for us, branding has to do more with how do you live a set of values that connect both to the marketplace and to employees. So what you're talking about is when a corporation has that type of commitment to people, they tend to attract people. So, and it says something. It says something about them and and we know that the level of pride, the level of engagement increases when people feel they work for people and organizations that are doing good
in
the world,
things.
You know. And when we look at these, the millennials and younger people, that's as important to them as the paycheck. And so it is. You are correct about that. So a little bit about the Clinton Global Initiative. You mentioned that. What impact has that had on you, on the program? Kind of just give me, I've known a couple of people that were involved in that, but give me your personal experience with it.
They have what's called a commitment to action mm-hmm. model, and it's very concrete. It's very linear. they're actually not funding anything. And that's where the, that's where I think the misunderstanding is a little on the bulk of their work.
Yeah.
So they look at core, they have core verticals,
mm-hmm.
you know, one in healthcare, one in green, one in education, one in workforce development. We fell in the workforce development world because this is really a labor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Department of Education issue, but it's also, we're more on the Department of Labor because they're, we're dealing with matriculating into workforce jobs. And that's where we made our first commitment to work with corporations and libraries to determine how, public libraries to determine how to re-engage people back into the educational system. So Clinton Global Initiative was able to help us create this commitment to action where then we could go out and say to McDonald's, which worked with us through our commitment to action, several big public libraries, Los Angeles Public Library, to say, look, we want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
And we're going to take action to this and we're going to fund the scholarships. But then it was a scholarship matching program. So if for every one scholarship that McDonald's purchased for their employee initially, we matched that scholarship.
So that's how it all...
But the Clinton Global Initiative wasn't... There was no exchange of money.
Just a connector, right?
It was just a connector.
Yeah.
For areas that need policy focus.
Correct.
And action.
Yes.
So that was our experience. I mean, it really...
When was that, Howard?
That it started in 2012.
Okay. So not that long ago.
And the irony is, here it is in 2016, and we just had some major legislation that was reauthorized, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, formerly WIA, that comes out of the Department of Labor, that now provides funding for secondary diplomas that are offered concurrently with occupational skills training in specific occupational clusters, which is what
which
we
do. Which is what you do. So you guys had an impact on that.
Yeah, I think the whole experience created energy
conversation
around,
starts, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And the federal government is really focused on this new legislation on about reconnecting, because we've been focusing so much on dropout recovery for compulsory age students that are between the ages of 16 and 21. Yeah. Well, this is focusing on engaging
out of
school youth
generations
and adults that are out of the
what
system.
What are most of the people age-wise that are you're dealing with?
29 and a half years old, average age, 68% females. Average age of our females that had children before the age of 18 is 54%.
Yeah.
Average, they've got 2.2 jobs, $18,000 to $21,000 in gross annual income, which comes down to $250 a week. So it was really... It was really essential for us to figure out this funding. And we recently, just earlier this week, got word that the state of Michigan was the first state to adopt us to their state workforce system.
Phenomenal.
So students can get the GED and get funded or GED prep, but they also can get funded for a program like ours, which is powerful for the adult education market.
Yeah. And that age group that you're talking about in that combination that you're using, that model where you're applying education skill sets to that workforce piece, that's just, to me, one of the most innovative things to what you're doing, you know, because I can get a degree, my high school degree, but it's applied to something, so it makes sense to me. So when you're 29 years old, it's a different animal than when you're even 22 years old, right?
Very much different. Very much
different. Your life experience is very different, and your goals are different.
And what we find is somebody who's 34 or 36 or 48 or 64, we just had a 72-year-old graduate last week. That 72-year-old graduate's not going to go back to her local school district, most likely.
No, not likely. Not likely.
And they're going to go to a community college, but not all community colleges have, that's not the core of what they do. Mm-mm. They focus on students who already have their high school diploma or remediating them to get them ready for post-secondary work.
Yes, yes. Interesting. So I've got two more questions here. Before I move, I want to talk a little bit about what's next for Smart Horizons, but tell me about what you're most proud of. You started something, I'm sure, with a whiteboard or something, or a sheet of paper or a spiral notebook, ideas, experiences, passions. What is it that you're most proud of?
That every single day I put my head on the pillow, I know that day we've impacted some person's life.
Yeah.
Because every day we have students graduating.
Yeah.
And This is something they felt a lot of shame about. Mm. They felt they never could do. And there's almost this 80% chance that they're going to continue on.
Yeah.
And if I can go put my head on my pillow every night and say, you know what, that's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. That's what drives me.
Yeah.
So it's really the students and seeing the impact, because it was built to reduce educational trauma. Mm-hmm. So when you start to see that a model is working, now, of course, I have somewhat researcher bias, but the data is the data.
Sure. But the stories are the stories,
and
too.
The stories,
you have stories,
are the stories
on your website.
We have tons
of
stories.
It's great stories.
Yeah, we do a lot of storytelling. And I want to also talk about, before we get to one next, what's next, because you're really seen as an expert in the importance of values, mm-hmm. organizational values driving mm-hmm. what we do. Our values are threefold. Be transparent, have heart, and execute. Mm.
And execute is important, isn't it?
It's so important.
People forget that, because ideas are wonderful and passion's wonderful, but you got to do something with it, which is again, what I said in the intro with you. It's that you saw something, you took your spirit and your experience and you execute it. So I think that's what's really amazing about what you've done, and something to be very proud of. That's what I'd be proud of if I were you. So you did it.
We did it. And I think when you do it with heart mm-hmm. and you're transparent, mm-hmm. And our mission is very clear. People come to me all the time and us all the time, why don't you do this? Why don't you go to... We have tons. We have 40 million people in the country who don't have a high school diploma. Let's stay focused on what our mission is. Yes. And that's to re-engage them, graduate them, and help them matriculate on into the workforce or post-secondary.
Right?
That's it.
Yeah, true.
So in terms of what's next for us.
Yeah, what is? Because,
I think what's next for us is really the fact that now there is... When I started this 5 years ago, we all would look at each other and go, there's no funding for this. There's nothing. Mm-hmm. So, we had to go to public libraries and work with them to get the funding. And we had to go to corporations and work for them. But there was really no funding. When students go on to post-secondary, there's a funding arm for them. When students want to find an alternative secondary diploma program, there's never been funding for them. Mm-hmm. Now it exists. So I think for what's next for us is really being able to have community central community impact through workforce centers across the country. That's what's next for us.
And that funding will open up those doors, because now it's there. You just have to tap into them and let them tap into you.
Correct.
You don't have to figure out how we're going to pay for this.
Correct. But it's new legislation.
Yeah.
And just as we've seen over the years in our country with new legislation and new big programs, they take a while for it to recalibrate and settle. So we're only really 6 weeks into this really taking effect, even though it passed 2 years ago. It really took effect. Six weeks ago.
God bless America.
God bless America. So I think what's next for us is to have really widespread community impact,
absolutely.
Economic, social.
Absolutely. I know we don't have much time, but I do have one last question for you. You deal with the results of a system, an education system. You've been in it. I've been in it. I always say, people ask me how I see myself, I think I'm always a teacher, right? Do you ever not be a teacher? And it's sad as we see these growing numbers of dropouts and in many ways the challenges that the human impact of people dropping out and the system doesn't seem to work for everyone, the education system. What do you think, if you were in charge, if you had the magic wand, what would you do to the public school systems as they exist today to maybe put you out of business?
In a lot of ways, I think we're actually moving in that direction. I think everything in this country appears to be cyclical. And I think that vocational education for many years has been seen as a stigma.
Yeah.
In the 50s and 60s, it was seen as going, if you went to vocational school, mm-hmm. was not seen as a good.
Yeah.
So I think we're moving towards a more of a choice path system. We're starting to see that there is a college prep path, but there's also a career prep path. And when we look at the jobs that are available
and good
and
paying
opening jobs that are not enough trained people to fill,
correct,
we need them in the career path pathway more than we need them in the college prep pathway. So a college degree and a bachelor's degree in psychology earns now less than somebody who's walking out with that is licensed and certified to be a medical biller. That's powerful.
That's powerful. Yeah.
So I think our economy is dictating where we're, you know, what we need and the jobs we need and the education paths we need. So I think that's, if I was king, I would skyrocket those initiatives.
Yeah. And you know, that's interesting because when I was teaching high school back in the 70s, that was a popular model where you had two tracks. There was everybody did the same 2 years, the first 2 years, so that if you made a different choice down the road to go to a more academic line, you could. 2 years of basics, then you either went to career path or you went to college prep. That was the model. I don't know what happened to it, but, you know, needless to say, it is. I think you're right. As we work with companies and corporations, we see it. They can't find enough skilled workers in many, many of these industries, whether it's healthcare, whether it's HVAC. That's a great plumbing companies. These people, they're making nice money.
$40, $50, $60 an hour.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's a good thing. Well, Howard, we've got to wrap this up. I appreciate so much you being here. It's been a while since you and I've had a chance to talk, and we'll bring you back and have a little bit more conversation around this. So thank you for being here. And for me, to you, and as a co-educator here, I really am in awe of what you've done. I think you've kind of taken the bull by the horns and you're making a huge difference. As you said, as you lay your head on the pillow every night, I think there is many, many things for you to be proud of. So thank you for that contribution.
Thank you, Mona.
So that's it for today. We appreciate everybody listening in, and we'll see you next week here where we'll meet you every Thursday at 4 o'clock at Core Radio. Let me try this again. At Core Radio. Okay, I've got to find my notes here so I can get it correct. CoreDialogues.BusinessRadioX.com. Who would have a name like that, right? Again, you can listen to our programs on our regular website at CoreDialoguesRadio.com, and that has all of the people that we've interviewed as well as connections. So we'll have the interview here with Howard online on that website where you can listen to that again, and also how to get in touch with Howard and learn a little bit more about Smart Horizon. So again, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week.